people that multitask get the same amount of work done as people that are stoned. Pretty funny when you think about it that way. And none of us want to operate that way. We want to be more efficient. We want to be intentional leaders.
Welcome to Culture at Work, where we explore what it takes to build great workplace culture in an ever-changing world. I'm your host, Tim Carroll. And on today's episode, we have Corey Carlson. Corey is an entrepreneur, executive coach, speaker, and author who helps leaders win at both work and home. Drawing from 20 years in corporate America, where he rose to the executive level, Corey knows firsthand the pressures and challenges leaders face, burnout, strained relationships, and the pull between professional success and personal fulfillment. After experiencing the life-changing impacts of leadership coaching himself, Corey left corporate life to help others lead with greater purpose and balance. Since then, he has spoken to thousands and coached over 220 corporate leaders, inspiring and equipping them to bring their best selves to both the boardroom and the living room. Corey is the author of two best-selling books, Win at Home First, named by Forbes as 7 books everyone on your team should read, and Rise and Go, a practical guide to getting back up quicker after life's challenges. He also hosts the Win at Home First podcast, ranked in the top 1.5% globally, and co-founded Rise, a nationwide community of male business leaders committed to excelling at work and home. Now, Corey is our first repeat guest, and we're so excited to have him. This is a great conversation to start off the new year. Let's go. Corey Carlson, Happy New Year. Welcome back as our first returning guest ever with on the podcast.
Awesome.
It is a pleasure, as always, to talk to you. This is a great, I just think that you're a great guest, period, full stop. But beginning of the year, everybody, new year, new you, everybody wants to kind of pull it together, tighten up a little bit, get the year started off right. And for me, getting your home life in order and your work life in order and balance the two is really, really important. So I just thought you're the best person for it. So thank you for joining us for the second time.
Hey, thank you very much, Tim. It was an honor to get the invitation. It's pretty cool.
And your last episode, if anybody's listening to this for the first time, go back, find Corey before and the other episode that we have from a couple of years ago, but it is well worth the listen. But again, we're going to ask you the same question, start off as we always do. And you've already answered it once before. I'm going to find this interesting to go back and listen to the two. Because things change. I really do think this answer can evolve. But here in 2026, how do you define culture?
Yeah, I would be curious what I said a couple of years ago as well. But I mean, how I define culture is just how, even without words being said, like, how are people engaging with each other? Can you tell, is there trust? Do people like each other? Are they quiet and they just, maybe walk away? It's fun when I travel into different companies to speak, I can sense the culture. You know, are they laughing? Everyone's kind of quiet, head down. Everyone's looking at their phone. Are they engaging with each other? You can just kind of observe culture. Do people want to be together or kind of retreat? Same thing with family. You can step into a house and just get the sense of, is it filled with love and joy, or is everyone kind of independently operating? And even my kids can tell on a sleepover. When they go spend the night at someone's house, come back, we ask them questions, they get the sense of the culture. There's family dinner. There's no phone. Or no, there's not really a family dinner. Everyone's kind of on the couch watching TV or in different rooms. You can just totally tell the engagement of others. So I think culture is just the idea of people either want to spend time together, their trust, accountability, or they don't. Isolation and survival.
You know, it's interesting. What comes to mind is that when you go to someone's house and you're like, that smells. There's something that's like, so you can go to someone's house and tell the different smells at different houses, and you can go to someone's house and tell the different cultures, right?
Absolutely.
So you said trust. I want to unpack that just for a second. I'm just curious. You know, I say all the time that the equation for trust is consistency plus time equals trust. Mm-hmm. How do you, if we could unpack that a little more, how do you feel trust can be built
And in all these questions, a lot of it's going to be balanced between home and work. But how do you feel trust can be built and maintained?
Well, I'm building off your equation consistently over time. Trust is built when your yes means yes. If at home, if you are a parent says, I will be at your game tonight, well, you're either at the game or you're not at the game. And if you do that too often, trust is broken. If you tell your spouse, on the way home, I'll stop by the store and pick up XYZ, or I will be home tonight by 6 o'clock. If you either are or you aren't. And over time, you're either building trust or your trust is eroding. And then at work, same thing will take place. Did you meet the deadline as you said you would? Meeting starts at 10 a.m. Were you there at 10 a.m. or were you there at 10:10? You build trust by consistently making your yes mean yes.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Is your team overloaded? Avanto helps teams save time and money by using AI to handle daily work from order management and AP processing to task handling without adding headcount. It works inside the tools you already use, with no new dashboards to manage. Go to goavanto.com to see how we can run your daily operations.
Every space tells a story, shaped by sound, light, and the way people feel inside it. At Mars, we believe architecture should perform as beautifully as it looks. Our interior wall systems are designed to provide acoustic support, refined aesthetics, and enduring quality, so people can focus, collaborate, and connect without distraction. Precision-engineered glass, solid partitions create calm, clarity, and flexibility, allowing spaces to evolve while maintaining design integrity. From workplaces to healthcare and education, Mars helps shape environments that truly support the people who use them, today and into the future. Mars, performance you feel, design that lasts.
Consistency compounds. So the more you're consistent, it's like compounding interest. It's going to compound. I find consistency to be a wicked mistress. And that is, you could do it. You could be very consistent. And it takes a while for that to garner trust. But it takes one time to fail to lose trust. And so it's really, really finicky and fickle. You've got to make sure you stay consistent. And I'm speaking, quite frankly, in the top of my mind, I'm thinking more at home and like with kids. But the same can be said for the office too.
Yeah, and we all are going to blow it occasionally. I also think our response to when we blow it, how we handle it, will maybe make an impact of how much trust is eroded. I mean, if I say I'm going to be home at 6 and I'm not, and when I kind of come in, I'm kind of dismissive about being late and like, you should just understand, babe, work was busy. And if I'm walking with that defensive posture already, that's not going to help my situation. But if I come in sincerely apologetic, like, hey, I'm sorry, I said I'd be 6, I got carried away, very sorry. I'm working on this, babe, I'm going to continue to get better. Two different responses. Same thing at work. If we erode trust, is there an apology? Did we say, hey, I'm sorry for missing the deadline, or I'm sorry for not meeting my numbers, or, you know, whatever that example is. Is there an apology, or is it a defensive posture, like blame it on the market, blame it on that other customer, blame it on that coworker?
You wrote a book called Win at Home First, and I just encourage everybody to run out and get this book. It really is for anybody that is struggling to balance the two, and this is a great time of year to do this and understand that if you get your home life in order, it's going to make things at the office much better. But in that, you often say that leadership doesn't start at the office, it starts at home. So how does the culture we create at home quietly determine the culture we eventually create at work?
I have a leader that I work with. I coach business leaders and, you know, one-on-one coaching or in group setting. This one particular leader, he's the CEO of a smaller company. And he's just been lacking confidence lately. You know, the way he shows up to his board, the way he shows up with some customers, and he shared that with me. And as we unpacked it, part of the reason he was lacking confidence is he was breaking his own commitments to himself. At first, he said he'd be working out in the morning. He wasn't working out. He said he'd start journaling on gratitude in the morning, and he wasn't. So he knew that his integrity wasn't there to himself. Then next, He had a few kind of broken promises to family members, such as, hey, I'll be at your sporting event, but he wasn't. And then that carries over at work. You know, leadership is always practiced somewhere first. For most of us, it starts in our own life. If we can lead ourselves well, then we can be confident. We have this high level of integrity. Then it's how do we treat our spouse and our kids from those relationships? Because if we know they're going well, that we're, you know, we're confident, our yes means yes. Then when we go to work, we walk in there standing tall.
It's amazing to me, the power of confidence. And I haven't thought about it a lot until you just said that. That diminishment of confidence can really wholeheartedly affect your leadership, how you interact with your family. I mean, it's confidence is a sneaky important piece to the success both at home and in the office, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And in confidence, I mean, yeah, some of us are born with it, maybe more than others, but no matter if you get born with a little more or a little less, all of us over time, our confidence is affected by our consistent daily habits. I mean, if I've had too many late nights in a row, or I've broken my own rule on sugar or alcohol or getting to the gym or doing my quiet time, I start to feel less confident. But man, when I'm hitting on all those things that I think are important to help me get going, I'm doing well.
Well, I think confidence can help with stamina. And I think this is a great lead into to my next question here is that, you know, many leaders listening, they're ambitious, driven, well-intentioned, we hope, but exhausted. End of the year, now we're gearing up. We're trying to get our stamina together for the new year. But how do we as leaders improve that stamina so we don't win just at one or the other? We don't just win at the office and we give all of our best there and there's nothing left in the tank at home. How do we improve that stamina?
A few things I want to make sure I hit on this. One is just the awareness that we've got to make it from the time we wake up to the time our head hits the pillow is a step in the right direction. For anyone listening to this, you have many more roles in life than just a great employee or great boss or great leader. You're also a spouse, a parent, a friend, plus a boss or a leader. So if you're going to get in a car and do a road trip, you're going to make sure that, hey, do I have enough gas to get from here to my destination? And if you don't, you're going to fill up halfway through or whatever you need to make sure you have enough gas to get there. Same thing with our energy throughout the day. We need to do whatever we can do to make sure that our day doesn't end when we walk through the front door, but instead when our head hits the pillow. So what does that look like? For some people, that may mean go for a walk around the building midday to get a little extra energy. Maybe that means on the drive home, instead of listening to sports radio or politics or another podcast, you turn it all off and to recharge and think positive thoughts going into your home. Maybe listen to some worship music or music that kind of inspires you so that when you walk in the house, you have more energy. The other thing, Tim, I'll say is all of us need to turn down the noise on our phones. I encourage a lot of my clients to turn off notifications. In 2025, Microsoft did the Microsoft Workplace Trend Report. Everyone who has a Microsoft suite, they've got access to your data. It says every 2 minutes, we are interrupted with a Slack, a meeting invite, social media prompt, every 2 minutes. That's just noise. That's tiring. So one thing I encourage leaders to do is to delete notifications. You do not need to know that there's breaking news on the other side of the world of an earthquake. You do not need to know that a stock went up and down. Unless you're a day trader, you don't need to know that what's taking place. Same thing, every email comes in. If you do the math the other way, that means we are checking our social media, our email over 200 times a day. And some listeners are like, oh, I don't do 200. Well, one, do the math or pay attention, but fine. Let's just say you do it 100 times. That's 100 times. We're not going to walk out to the mailbox 100 times to check out our mail at home. That would be crazy. But what we do with our mailbox at home is we batch it. We go to our mailbox once a day or maybe once every 2 days. And I'm not encouraging leaders to check their email once a day or once every 2 days. But that's just an example of how we batch time. I work with leaders that only check social media once a day, only check their email at 10 and 2, and they have maybe an assistant look. There's a lot of ways to kind of slice this. But the overall theme is, how, as a leader, can you turn down the noise in your life instead of allowing everyone to push their priorities to you? Instead, you say, I'm going to be in control. I'm going to pull it when I want. So when I want to go see my social media notifications, I'm going to go to that website and pull it. When I want to go see how did my sports team do last night, I'm going to go to that app and pull that information, as opposed to allowing ESPN, CNN, Fox, LinkedIn, everybody to keep pushing everything to me.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I got rid of notifications, changed my life, because I read a report about the endorphins and the things that get triggered in our brains when that happens, and we get a payoff. And so now we've conditioned our body to get that notification and then look at it and get a payoff on looking to see what that is. And I found myself in important meetings getting a notification, and in the middle of the meeting, like, you know, looking at my phone, which was rude and just not conducive to being in the moment. And so, you know, I just think that we have triggered ourselves to do that. And it is changing our focus. And then there's all kinds of statistics up out there. If you get distracted from what you're doing, it takes 22 minutes or something. Don't quote me on that, to get yourself back into the rhythm where you were. And so that distraction from those notifications, big, big, big deal.
When I wrote my second book, Rise and Go, I found a study that says, it was done in the UK, people that multitask, which you actually aren't multitasking, you're just toggling back and forth. So if you are on a webinar, but then all of a sudden you start looking at an email, you're not listening to the webinar anymore, you're reading email. And then you'll go back and forth. And the study said that people that multitask get the same amount of work done as people that are stoned. I have no idea why stoned was the variable, but anyways, pretty funny when you think about it that way. And none of us want to operate that way. We want to be more efficient. And so we need to be in control of the systems, of our calendar, of our email, of our technology, as opposed to allow all of that to control us. We want to be intentional leaders.
Be the masters of our technology. Don't let the technology be the master of you.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to break away for just a quick message, and we'll be right back after this.
At Working Spaces, we do much more than just sell furniture. We immerse ourselves in the culture of each and every client, and then create spaces that inspire creativity, inspire productivity, and inspire connectivity. So if you're looking to create an office space that inspires your employees to want to come back to the office, collaborate face-to-face, and do their best work every day, contact Working Spaces. Working Spaces, the innovative leader in office furniture and design since 1999. Now in 6 markets nationwide.
Let's get back to culture at work. So you mentioned Rise and Go. In there, you talk about two words that I love, and that is discipline and intentionality, especially intentionality. I feel that's the one thing we at Working Spaces do very well. We're very intentional with everything. You may disagree with something we do, and an employee may disagree with, but they can't disagree with there's method to the madness. There's a reason for it and intentionality behind it. So what daily habits can we have at home that can shape credibility and trust, like we've been talking about, with our teams at work?
I think an important daily habit for every leader is to make sure that you are leading yourself well. And whatever that is, it's going to help you. Is it to do quiet time, scripture, prayer, meditation, go for a walk, run, some form of exercise? But when we do that, you know, not only can we maybe have more energy throughout the day. I you know, Tim, you're the same way, because I know you exercise. The days I exercise in the morning, I have more energy throughout the day than the day I'm like, you know what? I'm sleeping in an extra hour today. I'm more tired throughout the day. I don't know. It's just wild how it works. But there's a book called Lead Yourself First. I've probably mentioned this in episode 1 that we did, because it's just so important. And the data is still the same, is that lead yourself first. the book, they said that in America, leadership is declined. That is not a political statement at all, but it says in education, in business, in churches, in government, leaders themselves, their leadership quality has decreased because solitude has decreased. Because with solitude, you get emotional balance and self-awareness. Because when you're sitting there in a chair and reflecting on the day prior, you're writing your three gratitudes, or you're saying, hey, why did I get angry in that meeting yesterday? It just brings up self-awareness and helps regulate your emotions so you don't go off the handle. So I think that starts first. Then secondly, from a family standpoint, family dinner, making sure you're leading your team well, dating your spouse at least, you know, once a month, maybe once every 2 weeks, getting one-on-one time with each of your kids, finding time for friends. I find it's been in my own life. I've got stories of my own life, but even just working with clients, busy executives, their career's taken off, they're leading a team, they're leading a company. A couple areas I see leaders fall apart is they're no longer dating their spouse. They become roommates. So we talked about confidence. You don't have a lot of confidence when you're walking in the office knowing that you're not doing very well in your marriage. What if someone asked? What if someone asked about the question, hey, how are you guys? Or did you go on a date? And also during the day, we mentioned technology, if you and your spouse get an argument in the morning, you're probably getting a text throughout the day continuing that argument. So if home is going great, then you can show up at work confident and carefree, not worrying about, oh man, am I going to get a bad text? Are we going to have to continue this argument? But you show up with confidence. So with executives I work with, I see them stopping the day. So I help get them back to pursuing their spouse. I also see a lot of leaders who no longer have friends. As their family grew, they started investing time in them. As their career took off, they were busy. And so what falls off is friends. Well, Tim, that leads leaders to isolation because there's a lot of people whose real friends aren't at work, or they can't be at work because they're the boss. They sign the paycheck. So we need to make sure we're having friends outside of work for encouragement, accountability. So it starts out leading yourself well. Next is, hey, how are you doing in your marriage with your kids and your friends? And then from there, you take that confidence, that energy, that renewed sense of purpose, then you're able to lead well at work.
So a couple of things on that. One, I'll tell you that I started a few years ago after reading, and a lot of people have read about this 5 a.m. club. Mm-hmm. And so I started getting up, setting my alarm. I get up at, you know, in the 5 o'clock hour, usually 5:15. And that's when I spend my kind of alone time, scripture, setting my mind right. And it is the only time that really I get alone all day. Mm-hmm. I have learned to just value that time. And it's the first little bit, it was kind of tough to get yourself going, but that is my most favorite time. The other is, since knowing you, I have invested more in friendships.
Cool.
And I'm not great at it because very busy and I travel a lot and all that. But even my wife acknowledged recently, she has seen a difference in my investment in building friendships, not a gazillion of them, but a handful of them, and trying to get to a place where, you know, it's iron sharpening iron. And these are people that I'm surrounding myself. So I can say the five people that I most surround myself is who I am. And
yeah.
And so, and that's because of you. I will say that I really have thought about that almost every day since we first met.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And I encourage others to do the same, because it really is, especially as executives, it can tend to get to the point where you're investing all of your time, energy, and effort into the business, hopefully your family, and there really is nothing left over. And it's just refueled me in a great deal to just spend a little bit of time with friends outside of all of that. So leaders often say, hey, my family understands. I'm building something. I've been guilty. And as I thought about it leading up to today, my thought really got around to, do they? Do they really? Do you think they really do? And if they don't, what can we do to help continue to build as entrepreneurs and business leaders, to continue to build, but also not default to this, I don't have to worry about this because they know I'm building something.
Let's just assume that every spouse, every family initially understands that. idea. Let's just go. I mean, there's probably somebody out there who went and launched a business or did something, and before even launch point, the spouse was like, I don't believe in this. That's a bad move. So let's just eliminate those and say, I think every listener, their family, their spouse, their kids initially believe that was all in on mom, dad, they're building something. Let's go. I believe all of our sprints need expiration dates. We can't just keep working hard and think it'll get better next month. It'll get better next month. Oh, just once this quarter's over, it'll get better. If that never gets better and it's always the same, then your family will become less and less excited about your mission, your work, and it'll lead to resentment. So find ways in your schedule to, you know, maybe go on a vacation afterwards or to do a staycation if time or money doesn't allow for it. And we all have these sprints in our life. I mean, when I wrote a book, at the end of the book push, we did a vacation. At the end of a fiscal year, at the end of a quarter, just be mindful of, is there a break you can make? And there has to be. If not, the family will break.
Right.
And so make sure that you are, in your mind, having different expiration dates of these sprints. So that's one piece of it. The second is communication. Communicating with the family of what is taking place. So they feel engaged. They want to be part of the mission. They're not going to understand all your coworkers' names and dynamics, but at least share some of them. Or if you get a big project that you win, share it at the dinner table. If you lose, share it at the dinner table.
Maybe even more so.
Yeah, it builds resilience in your kids and your spouse, and they can see. But by sharing the ups and downs, by talking about work, they feel they're part of the mission. But if you keep it distant, it's going to be more like a work wife. It'll be like it's the thing over here that none of us, you know, that you aren't talking about. But weaving it into the conversation can be great.
So I love the idea of the expiration date to it. And I tend to have that expiration be a trip. And we try to take a couple a year as a family. Also, now as our kids are getting older, try to take one as a couple, even be it short. But what I would add to that is not just the act of going on a vacation, but being present for it. I've done it both where I'm like, I'm checking a box. We're all there. We're going. But my attention is still at the office and I'm still emailing and doing all that stuff. And I've also gone on those kind of trips where I completely gave over to it. And believe it or not, the ones where I was completely in the moment and gave over to it were the ones that everybody enjoyed the most. So that's the one thing I would add is just the act of doing it and saying, look what I've done for you. Now you guys get to go have a good time. Why, you know, don't complain. I would say humbly, the trip is great, but the time is better and they want the time together more than the trip.
Absolutely. I mean, our kids want our presence over our provision. I mean, yes, even in my house, I got to make sure, you know, we're kind of buying the new shoes and we've got the trendy clothes or whatever it is. But my son, he wants to go shoot baskets with me. He wants to make sure I'm playing. And my daughters, tomorrow morning, we've got my 21-year-old and I, we have a 9 a.m. date at a coffee shop. And she's been sleeping in, so she's going to get up earlier to do it because she wants to. She wants to share with her vision board with me, and I'm going to share my, basically I call it a WIN dashboard. It's a dashboard I've created that I've used for years, and I share with my clients with basically all the five capital, what are my goals for this year, the next 3 years, the next 5 years, and love it. Anyway, so we're going to be sharing that tomorrow. She's excited about it. She approached me on it. But I will say, the only reason she approached me on it is because I, over the years, have consistently invited her on dates, ice cream or coffee, depending on, you know, kind of what it was and her age. Tim, this is kind of fresh in my mind because my father-in-law passed away yesterday.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, well, thanks. It's a great thing because his last 3 years, quality of life has just gone down, down, down due to a stroke. So it's actually, we're very grateful for it yesterday, but you know, in the last 24 hours and all of our conversations, we're talking about who he was, not what he did. All right? We're talking about the way he individually acknowledged all of us in our own fun way. For each of my three kids, he bought a different kind of, a different brand Oreos. And he would kind of, you know, in a fun way, sneak over and give one of my daughters the lemon one. and the birthday cake one to my son, and just like things like that. But just other examples where he individually was paying attention to each of them. They have no idea how successful or non-successful he was. He did well, but you know how he did at work. But they remember who he was as a man. If all of us talk about wanting to build legacy, it's why we're going and building a big company or big teams or big nest eggs. Or that's what we're all working so hard for. Legacy is not built off accomplishments. It's built off the relationships we have. There's a quote out there between Bill High and David Green and the CEO of Hobby Lobby. And legacy is not what you leave behind, but it's what you set in motion. And so as a leader of our families and of our teams, are we aware? Are we thinking about that? Are we thinking more about the money and the accomplishment and the mountain we're trying to climb? Or are we thinking about the relationships we're building, the character traits, the way we're investing in people?
Again, I'm sorry for your loss. I know we both know he's in a better place, but I've lost both of my parents. Mm. And I just, when you're saying this, I realize those moments right after feel clearer than any other time in my life about that very point, that it's about the relationships you build, not about what you do. You forget about it. I forget about it. I definitely have distanced myself from that thought process in the immediacy after the passing of my parents. But it's that those moments that you're in right now, I feel like they're the most clear moments in life. Those days, maybe weeks, right after a significant loss where you really get it, that it's about a relationship. Nobody is going to care when they're talking about who you were at your funeral. Are they going to talk about, man, oh man, was he so successful? Man, look at the wealth that he built.
You're right, right.
It's going to be all about the relationships. And that's both at work and at home. But that moment, it just hit me that moments right after a significant loss, it feels like you are clearer than ever in that mindset.
Yep. Completely agree. Yeah, you can't go manufacture that the other 365 days out of the year. I get it.
But I do think
by having our quiet times, by maybe having some reminders in your office, like we can be reminded of that a little bit more. Like the verse, teach us to number our days so that we may have wisdom. Like I'm using that as a reminder of, I've just got a set amount of days in my life. I don't know what that number is, but there's a set number. So, you know, by teaching me to number my days, they give me wisdom on how to lead well. That verse I worked on is 2 years ago during a kind of a quiet time reading that. It hit me that summer was going to be my oldest daughter's last summer in our house. Out of nowhere, I had this idea. I'm taking Fridays off so I can hang out with her. And so for that summer, I took off those Fridays. There was two Fridays I couldn't because I lead a mastermind. But for the other Fridays, and you know, it wasn't like a ton of Fridays because, you know, it's summer. She came back from, had to go back to school and, you know, there's some things in there. I mean, I think it was probably 7 or 8 Fridays I took off so I could hang out with her. We went to the pool. We did coffee shop. Sometimes she didn't want to hang out with me because she went out of town. But that's that idea. Hey, when we teach this number of our days, do we have wisdom? What does that look like? If you have living parents, go see them. If you have a college kid, go see him or set up some Zoom meeting to continue that, you know, conversation. If you have kids in the home, how can you spend more time with them? Intentional time.
Stress reveals culture.
Mm.
And in that, I would say when we're stressed, we're like a tube of toothpaste. And when we're squeezed, what is truly us comes out. What lessons from handling pressures at home translate most to directly to leading teams through uncertainty?
I know some people handle stress at home differently than they would at work. You know, I talk with dads that are clients that they yell at home. The kid doesn't brush their teeth. They're yelling. They don't yell at work because they want to look like the, you know, professional. You know, so that is interesting as some people. And I think that's just an overall good question. As a leader, we need to have integrity. Do you lead at home and work the same way? And yes, I know there's some nuances. At work, you pay them. At home, you don't. At home, they can roll their eyes. Work, they don't do that as much. I get it. But as a whole, integrity is being a whole person. Are you the same leader at home and work? And so if you're not yelling at work, don't yell at home. On the flip side, maybe at home, you're much more apologetic and you're quick to forgive. But at work, you're not. You got imposter syndrome and you make sure you got all your ducks in a row and look like you know what's going on. And so you don't apologize. You don't want to look weak. So I think a question a leader needs to have is, hey, am I the same person home and work? Because you can only live two lives for so long, and then it's exhausting.
The one thing I think that, and trust me, I do plenty of things that I'm a work in progress, as we all are. But the one thing that I do like is that in both home and work, the word grace is thrown around a lot. So I've gotten our organization to use that word grace, and we use it at home as well. And I think it's an important piece to, because at work, you know, it's funny, everybody wants grace when they make a mistake, but they're very quick to start pointing when somebody makes a mistake that affects them.
Heck yeah.
So we talk a lot about, hey, we want grace. And in order to deserve that grace, we need to give grace. And so I think that's a word for us, both at home and at work. That's a really powerful word.
Yeah, that's cool. That's neat you got in both places. And just hitting on that, are you leading the same at home and work? You mentioned using the grace at both places. I want to take this a step further of, are you leading the same at home and work? Meaning at work, you're intentional. You have one-on-one meetings. You've got a team vision. You've spent time orchestrating the values. You have quarterly retreats. You plan for an upcoming big meeting. You spend some time thinking through the, you know, maybe the theme and location. Do you do any of that at home, or are you winging it? And our families pay attention. They can see how much time we are spending to plan the holiday party. But yet we did zero thinking on Christmas shopping or maybe writing letters to our family members or whatever that may be. But I think for all of us to think through, hey, am I putting as much intention at home and in my personal life as I do my work life?
Kind of along those same lines, again, a nice transition here would be talking about accountability. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a loaded word in business, but how does healthy accountability in a family environment differ, or should it, from a corporate accountability? And what should leaders borrow from either model?
You're bringing all kinds of good questions today. It's good stuff. When there's accountability, I've seen both places, but people are more free to be themselves, to be their true selves, because there's no more posturing. If you make a mistake, say you're sorry, and everyone moves on together. If you say a goal you've got and you've got friendly encouragement to help you try to achieve that goal at home, maybe it's working out or losing weight. And when there's a nice culture of accountability, it comes with encouragement. It may come with some challenge, but it can make you better. And then I kind of know in our house with some of the accountability pieces we've got going on, it's everyone's just kind of more real, more vulnerable. And then, you know, work with the same team. Those teams that hold each other accountable, they function better. That's why, like in the Patrick Lencioni, the famous book of 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, one of the very first pieces to get right is accountability. Because once you get that together and you kind of know, hey, we're kind of working with each other, not against each other, then, you know, great things can happen.
Curious your thought on this, but I kind of feel as if over the years, peer-to-peer accountability is more powerful than a dictatorial accountability where do this because I say so. And if you don't do this, there'll be consequences. Maybe there's a place for that. But I do feel there's more power in a peer-to-peer accountability, a small piece of a larger whole kind of mentality that an employee, I believe any employee, no matter what their level, should feel.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same way? Is that
yeah,
different?
I think a boss can do it well. I think a peer could do it not well. I mean, kind of depending on the situation, but I think you need two components, no matter who's doing it, someone up or someone to the side. In the book, When Home First, I talk about this matrix, invitation and challenge. All of us need to lead this way. And we want people around us to lead, where we are inviting people into relationship. And we're challenging them to responsibility, both. It's truth and grace. It's inviting them into relationships. So what does that mean? So at work, inviting them in relationship is, do you know your employee's spouse name, their kid's name, what motivates them, what are their hobbies, where do they like to go vacation? Like, you can have a legit conversation with them. You've invited them into relationship. at-home environment relationship means hanging out, getting ice cream, getting coffee. Do you know some of your kids' friends' names? Do you know what they like to do? What's the music or TV show they're watching? Challenge and responsibility means at work, you got a deadline. You missed your numbers this month. You were late to the meeting. At home, responsibility is grades, make your bed, do your laundry. It's both. And when we are led with both relationship and responsibility, we thrive. I had a boss I worked for a few years. It was all challenge. I had three kids. I'm pretty sure they didn't even know how many kids I had. They for sure didn't know name. And we had a good week. And on our one-on-one call, as far as good activity, I was like, yeah, it's going to be a good we moved on right on to, well, what are you doing next week? What's the outlook for next month? If we had a bad week, well, I would have hoped we would have went on to look ahead like we did. But no, we just would sit in it and talk about why that week was so bad. When you are a leader that's high dictator, you may get short-term results from your employees and even from your kids. But at night, the employee's looking at LinkedIn for a new job. When the kid goes to college, they get rebellious because the guardrails are falling down. They want to go roam. Then on the top left, you know, kind of this matrix idea, top left, if you are all relationship and no responsibility as a friend, as a leader, as a parent, it's a cozy culture. All you do, I don't worry about that. Man, what'd you think about that football game this weekend? There's no accountability. It's a cozy culture. If you have a culture like that, your A players leave.
That's right.
If you have a cozy culture like that at home, your kids get bored. They start looking around. Hey, there's, you know, that boyfriend over there kind of more, you know, enjoyable than my family. My family's kind of bored. So we want to be both relationship responsible. Our employees are empowered and our kids are loved when we do live in that quadrant.
So as we come to the end here, this is a kickoff to the new year, 2026. I'm interested in kind of your cadence leading into a new year. What do you do? For me, I always come up with the five Fs, you know, faith, family, friends, fitness, finance, and have a SMART goal attached to those that I try to accomplish throughout the year. I pick a word of the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get my ringtone to match the word of the year. So it's always reminding me every time the phone rings.
Ooh, I like the ringtone. Okay.
Yeah. So sometimes it's easier than others to find the ringtone that matches. What do you do to prepare yourself intentionally, to go back to that word, for success in the new year?
Yeah. What is your word of the year?
Faith.
Cool.
And again, not to go too deep into it, but I don't feel I chose that word. Was very clear that it was chosen for me. That's it. That could be a good thing or a bad thing. We'll see what happens this year, but faith is my word of the year.
And then do you lay out, when I do my word of the year, I then lay out what that looks like at work as a husband, as a father, as a friend. Do you lay out what that word looks like in those areas?
Yes. A word like faith, I've feel it could, I could decide what I think it is, and it may be very different this year, but they're not always that way. I mean, sometimes it's pretty clear. This word is, the intentionality of this word is very, faith leaves me a little shook when that word came to me. I was like, okay, all right, let's do this. Faith it is. But yeah. I do have an idea of from a work perspective where this needs to lie. And definitely from, as my kids are now getting into the teen years and high school years, faith is very important.
Yeah, for sure. I heard this phrase I just love, and it's, I pray that your faith has feet.
Yeah.
I just think that's so cool, because faith is not just sitting on the couch and I hope this works. It's like, no, man, faith is actually stepping out.
It's a verb.
Taking steps to restore the relationship or to go pursue the new business account or whatever it is. So, Tim, I pray your faith has feet in 2026.
Well, amen. Thank you so much. Your mouth to God's ears. But what do you do to prepare? I know you have this, you mentioned it, you've mentioned it before. You have your five capitals, you have your things, but what do you do going into the new year?
Some similarities for sure that you have. One thing, and it's not too late for a listener if you've not done this, it's not too late. Matter of fact, you can even do this. I do this with all my clients every 6 months. But I use the five R's to reflect on the previous month. Because what we don't want to do is we just don't want to go into the new year and really not take with us what we learned and how we grew and how we got better and better versions of ourselves. So the five R's is in 2025, what went really well at home and work? And writing those items down, what went really well? Secondly is reach. Where did you reach? Where did you step out at home, at work, in your leadership? And I know it's two things, Tim, with clients is usually the reach was what went really well. Giving evidence that often when we stretch ourselves, it's not a debacle. It's not a disaster. It usually actually worked out pretty well. So you take that confidence and lean into that and take some courageous reach in 2026. The next R is the release. Hey, what do you want to get rid of? You're not taking in 2026. It's a toxic relationship, a bad habit. Next is revitalize. So, hey, what are we going to bring back to life in 2026? Relationship, mindset, habit. And then the last R is reveal. What do you feel is being revealed to you about your home and your work over the next few months, few years, or the year? So anyways, I start with the five R's. I do some reflection with the idea of, hey, through reflection comes revelation. Then I do the five capitals, which is just like your five F's. I do a word of the year. My word of the year is more. And so I want more healthier days in 2026. I want more intimacy with God. I want more connection with my wife and kids and friends. I want more RISE members. I run a community of 100 plus men. I want more men in there. I want more speaking engagements. And so anyways, that's the idea of kind of going. And you do your ringtone. I base mine off a verse. So Ephesians 3:20 is, now to him who is able to do far more abundantly than all that we ask of him, according to the power of work within us. And that more.
Well, I'll take a quick prayer for you that you do have more this year, and that it expands, that God expands you even further than you could have possibly imagined. So I hope and pray for that for you. Corey, thank you. Intentionality, if there's one thing that I hope that everybody gets, we are sometimes as just people, I was going to say leaders, but just as people, we are intentional with our work life, but we just kind of go on a whim with our home life. And so hopefully from this, you get and understand that if you want to win at work, you got to be intentional and make plans. But the same things are true at home, that you got to be intentional and make plans for success. Don't just let it happen around you. Be intentional about it. So Corey, thank you so much. Happy New Year again. I can't wait for our next conversation.
Thanks, Tim. I always enjoy talking with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely.